Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the World of Ink Network. Founded in 2011 by Virginia Grenier and Marcia Casper Cook, their vision was to start a radio show that helped authors reach their dreams. The World of Ink Network has a wonderful group of hosts who are also authors and dedicated to delivering shows to entertain and inspire listeners. The World of Ink Network shares resources that introduce tips, products, and services to help strengthen, support, and challenge those who love writing and the written word. Their hope is to bring not only authors, illustrators, and publishers together, but screenwriters, directors, and producers. New to the network will be a variety of special shows bringing not only entertainment but informative discussions on timely subjects. To learn more about us, go to www.worldofinknetwork.com or visit us on our Facebook and Twitter pages. Thank you for your support and enjoy the show.
Hello, hi, it's Marcia from World of Ink and Marcia Casper Cook. And I know you were thinking Virginia would be here, but Virginia is off today, and I am taking over the show with Tracy. Hi, Tracy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. This is the first time we're doing a show together, so this should be fun. Tracy likes to talk as much as I do. We're both talkative. We have a great guest today, Michael Byron Smith, and he's talking about dadhood, and he's a first-time author, but he's done a lot of other things, which we'll let him introduce himself in a couple seconds. But Tracy, did you want to just talk about that you're an author and some of the books that you do, so they'll know who you are?
I've been a writer for about 4 or 5 years professionally. I'm published with 2 different publishers and have 2 different books. My second one comes out this summer. We don't have an official date on it yet. It is a parallel novel with my first. My first is called Killing Casanova, and my second is Burning Bridger. Look for that one on Amazon.com as soon as I can get it out. I'm a blind author. I do not see anything at all, and so all of my work is done on a talking computer. So anytime I get the opportunity to talk, I'm all about it.
That's good. I know that we've talked. Okay, and I am Marcia Cook, and I'm also an author and a screenwriter and host of the shows for the last 4 years, and then Virginia and I were doing shows with Red River, and today we have a really great guest, Michael Byron Smith. Hi, Michael. How are you?
Hello, Marcia. Hello, Tracy.
Hello.
So I'd like you to introduce, because there's a lot of things you've done. We will be talking about your book, and it's Father's Day on Sunday, so it's really a great time to talk about this. But you've done other things before. So you did a few things, I think, in your life to get you to where you are. So why don't you tell us about that?
Okay. Yes. I was in the Air Force for a long time. I was a pilot. I flew B-52 bombers during the Cold War. Used to sit alert next to the aircraft, waiting for something to happen that we hope never happened. And then after I went into the National Guard in Missouri for 29 or 23 more years. So I spent a total of almost 30 years in service. But while I was in the National Guard, I was also a civilian engineer at Boeing Aircraft, and I worked on the F-18 fighter. I was a government engineer working at Boeing, I was the customer, basically. And then I've had 3 children, and I've got 4 grandchildren, and they are the loves of my life. And that's where I'm spending most of my time now. I'm retired, and in my retirement, I wanted to give back. And the way I gave back was I wanted to write this book about fatherhood, because it's always been something important to me.
Well, you know, I noticed that when I saw that you were an engineer, a lot of people don't know that I have an electronic company, and that's where we used to deal with a lot of engineers, and it's, you know, everything that you do in life, I gets you to the next place, so you may start out one way, and then you do another thing, so, you know, we never know what we're going to be doing as the years go, and especially as authors, you probably didn't think you were going to be an author.
I never thought I'd be an author, but, and when you're an engineer, you usually... not the best writers in the world sometimes, but I had a lot of help with editing, and they got me through it. But the topic is so important to me that I was going to be an author one way or the other.
And you're published
I read
with
that
familiar...
one of your...
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I read that one of your daughters has a degree in literature from, is it Missouri?
Yes, he went to the Missouri School of Journalism, one of the best
in the country.
The
Missouri School of Journalism.
Yes.
Was she a big help to you?
Absolutely. When I first wrote my book, it was a jumble of notes and things, and I gave it to my daughter, and she looked at it, and she didn't even try to edit it. It was such a jumble. She said, "Dad, you've got to organize this better." So I did. And organization was so important, and she got me to that major point. So, yes, my oldest daughter was a tremendous help to me. I wouldn't be here today talking to you if it was not for her.
Well, you know, I think what most people don't understand is really what, you know, everybody's a writer, but editing is not an easy job to do. Virginia does
no.
editing. I have an editor. I need editing. Most people do. And it's, you know, a lot of people think they don't, but everybody does need editing because, you know,
mm-hmm.
just even to make sure that you're not repeating the same thing, you know, twice because it happens.
Yeah, I learned also that you can never have too much edits. I had a complete edit from a gentleman that I hired myself. And then when I got a publisher, Amelius, they had their own editor, and they went through it again and found a bunch of other things. So it was really really good. I appreciated all the help I got.
Yeah, because I think a lot of editors, what they do is they do one, and, you know, they do it their own way. And if you're with a publisher, it's, you know, it's difficult because you think it's one way, but then did they take out a lot of things? Or
no, not really. They didn't take out a lot of things. What they did, especially the one from the publisher, was they asked a lot of important questions, like, how did you really mean this? Or, how do you think people are going to take that? You know, just questions like that. And it really helped me. It was not so much always, you know, punctuation and commas and things like that, but it was a lot of, you know, what did you really mean to say here? And that helped me a lot.
Tracy, you're going to ask something.
I worked as an editor for a publishing company outside of Las Vegas, Nevada.
Oh, you
and,
do?
That's good.
I didn't.
I work for a company called Ink and Quill Publishers. They publish right outside of Las Vegas.
That's good.
One of the things that we have to do is we have to weight words. Words are powerful, but they have different measures of what they can express and what different readers interpret from them. So a lot of times.
Right.
What you mean to say and what's coming across to your reader are two different things. So good editors it's hard work, but it's important.
Yeah, I think that's true because it does come off a certain way. And I think, you know, and sometimes in different states, people talk differently and they mean things differently. You know, I learned that a long time ago because I may say something one way, but somebody else may say something another way to mean exactly the same thing.
Yes, and when you're writing, we find out in email, some people completely mistake your tone, and so you have to be very careful how you say things.
Oh, that email.
But,
yes, it can be bad because you could think someone is, you know, just brief and quick, but they're just not that kind of person. They're just trying to do it brief and quick as an email or a text.
Right.
That's not how they are.
I guess that's
You know you're a good writer if you can get your tone into your emails. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's hard to do because a lot of times...
That's one of the reasons they invented emoticons, I guess, just to help people say, hey, I'm being serious here or I'm being funny, you know. So you don't want people to misunderstand you.
No, this is not a good thing. I know.
No.
So, you know, one of the questions I think that, you know, probably people would want to know is, like, when people, let's say, well, you're living in a family and you've been married for many, many years, but what about the people that haven't been married for many years and some of them are divorced, separated? How do you think the father, you know, it's always about father's rights these days, and a lot of people don't think they have as many rights, and they probably don't because sometimes they really are good fathers and they're not able to see their children. How do you talk about that when you're speaking?
Well, I do, especially when the question comes up, and it seems to do that a lot. But, you know, my book is really about prevention, and it's not about curing. Because if you can get young children at a young age and teach them the right things, you won't have the issues that some people have later on in life. But it becomes tougher when you're a father that doesn't live with your children, especially if you've got away from them when they were young, and you've got quite a job to do. First of all, you've got to hope that the mother cooperates with you. And sometimes,
yeah.
You know, since you are divorced, there's something going on there, and hopefully it's something that they can look past and not have the children be affected, because sometimes the mother and first of all, I want to say that mothers are the heroes of the world as far as I'm concerned. But there are mothers that do try to get even with their exes by keeping
yeah.
the children away. And that's a
yeah.
total mistake. Every child needs a father's influence, unless he's an evil man, and that doesn't really is the case. In most cases, he's not a bad man. He's just something that they just can get along. But the child does not need to suffer from that.
Yes, I think that's one of the things. Because, you know, even some people that have done bad things, they still are good fathers and they love their children. And sometimes,
sure.
you know, it's a mistake to think that they're not going to be, you know, if they're not a great role model, but that doesn't mean that they don't love their children and their children don't probably benefit from being with them at some point.
Well, my father was not a good role model. And one of the reasons I wrote the book is because of that. My father was an alcoholic. He was abusive. When he was rarely around, and when he was around, he was disruptive and not really a good man. When he was sober, my father was kind, gentle, and brilliant. But he was not the kind of drunk that he was not a very good drunk. So he wasn't around much, and it affected my whole family. I'm the oldest of six children, and all of us suffered a little bit from my father not being there for us. It was socially, we did, monetarily, school. I was the only one of six of us to graduate from high school because there just wasn't that structure or, you know, leadership. My mom was a great mom, but she had six kids to deal with, and she only had a 10th grade education. So it was really tough for her. So it's really important to have that second parent around to help. And that second parent
What do you think was the greatest impact that having an absent father had on your family?
Well, you know what happens is you have teen pregnancies. Because there's
mm-hmm.
my sisters were looking for male approval. They didn't get it from my father, so they're looking for male approval. And when they're looking for that, they'll find men sometimes who are trying to prove their bravado because they didn't have a dad in their lives. So you've got a male, and males usually have to show their masculine in some way or the other. And a father knows how to get that out of him and do it the right way. But when you have a young man who's trying to prove his masculinity, and you have a young girl who's looking for male approval, you're going to end up with possibly a child. And when you do, there's not going to be a happy marriage there. And you're going to have another family that may be only a single parent family. And it just grows and grows if something doesn't happen to stop that cycle.
When I was 17 years old, my father passed away. And I saw that cycle with my sisters especially. We went searching for approval. Mm-hmm. We went searching for approval from men because the male figure in our family was missing. My sister ended up having a teenage pregnancy as well.
Yeah.
Both of my sisters did. And their children also had the same thing. It's in the third generation now. And it will continue. I was lucky. I was affected by the whole thing of my father also. But the way I was affected was a little more quietly. I was a very shy kid. I had no confidence at all. I didn't know how to get out of it. And what exacerbated it was the fact that we were very poor, and I had to move. We moved quite a bit. I went to 30 different schools because, we're jumping from one school district to the other because we're being kicked out of our apartments for non-payment of rent. And so that's not the kind of life to grow in. There's no stability there at all. And I decided that I didn't want to live like that anymore, and I had goals. And when I was a little boy, 8 years old, I loved airplanes, and I wanted to be a pilot. And that was my goal. I said, I'm going to be a pilot. And I know that to be a pilot, I have to go to school and I have to go to college. And that's what I did. I had a focus. Whereas my brothers and sisters were not lucky enough to have that focus. And my brothers got into some troubles, not major troubles, but minor troubles. And my sisters are still searching for, neither one of them have ever found a man, a solid man to share their life with.
Now, do you think your mother, what role did your mother play in this in trying to be both mother and father? Did she, or was she working?
She had to work. And I was babysitting at 10 years old for 5 kids. Not all the time. My grandmother helped out another woman in the house. There was no man around.
Yeah.
But when my grandmother couldn't be there, I had to watch the kids because my mom had to go to work. So I even had a brother, you know, like under a year old that I had to watch. And that's not something you should have happen at 10 years old. And believe me, brothers and sisters do not respect a 10-year-old brother. They don't want to listen to him. So it's not a good situation. Yeah.
So you didn't have a childhood, actually. You were more...
I didn't have a very good one. I really have a bad memory about my childhood. Actually, I remember certain parts of it, but it's been made up for in my rest of my life. I mean, I've had a wonderful life, wonderful wife, wonderful children, wonderful grandchildren. I found a way out of it.
How do your brothers and sisters take to the fact of what you wrote? You know, like you're writing about.
They like it. They understand it. My one sister, when I said that none of them ever graduated from high school, that's true. But later on in life, of course, one of my brothers got a GED, and one of my sisters got her college degree at age 50. So I applaud
her.
Well,
that's
her
great. For her, that's great.
Done. Yes, yes. But
it's not easy to do.
Still, what does she do?
It's not easy to do that. Go back to school.
Oh, no, it's not. It's not easy to do.
Continue.
You know, a degree at that age, and she wanted to get out of the cycle she was in. She's not married now, but she does have a son in the Army. She has a son who is a police officer, and both of them have respectable jobs. And but she did have a daughter though that had 4 children out of wedlock. So
yeah.
I mean, and that daughter is doing well now too, but. My other sister had a daughter that had 4 children in wedlock, but the father was terrible. And all 4 of those boys are now having children without being married. So that cycle just keeps on going until something happens to stop it. And usually it's a good father and a good mother that stops it.
Now, so what message do you promote your book? You go out and speak, right?
I haven't spoken a lot yet. I've spoken a couple times.
Yeah.
I'm willing to go anywhere to speak. I'm speaking this Saturday at a very wonderful organization called Little Patriots Embraced.
Mm-hmm.
Little Patriots Embraced is an organization that helps military families, and they have a program that is helping with PTSD for families whose father has PTSD. And they have chosen my book to share with these families. And
oh, that's
really
great.
Thankful. Yeah, I appreciate that so much. And I've donated quite a few books to them for that purpose.
That's really good. You know, because I saw there's a new book out. I don't know who's what. I saw it on Facebook where a father is, you know, he has written a children's book to explain, you know, why sometimes he's not in the best mood and he's trying, you know. And it's a really hard thing. It's very tough.
Yes, you know the title.
No, I will get it for you because it was on Facebook. I know I saw it. It's for young kids. And because I think a lot of times people think that young kids get it, they don't understand it. You know, post-traumatic is a very tough thing. And I think it lasts forever. I mean, it doesn't disappear.
And children sometimes think that dad is mad because of them, and it's not that at all.
Right, yeah.
It's the things that they're going through trying to get past what they have seen and done and had to do.
Because I think that when you're little, sometimes maybe when you grow up, you understand some of the things, but that's a long way coming because you've got to go through all these years where you just in question of what's happening in your family. Tracy, remember
that
you said...
That's unhealthy. Sorry.
No, I was saying...
unhealthy.
Go ahead.
that's how those unhealthy cycles start, when dads have issues and problems of their own, kids think that they're their fault, and then they grow up perpetrating that same attitude and that same type of a thing with their own kids. That's how those cycles that last for generations.
That's right, Tracy. That's a good thought, because, you know, you grow up doing the things that you grew up, what your parents grew up doing. You do things the same way they do, unless you go out there and research, read. And you know what? Mothers do that a lot. Mothers read parenting books quite a bit.
Yeah.
Fathers do not read parenting books, and that's a problem. A lot of fathers shoot from the hip. They think they know what they're doing. They think they're doing what's best, and they think, hey, I'm being a dad, that's good. But, you know, there's better ways of doing things, and dads need to realize that, and they need to do a little research and say, you know, how can I handle the situation better next time?
And that's why your book is so valuable.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I wrote the book. There's three parts to the book, if I might say. First part is trying to talk about why dads are so important. And in that, I talk about a lot of statistics about families that don't have a father in the home. And if anyone would go into the Internet and just put fatherless children statistics, they would be amazed at what they would find. I mean, some of the things is a child is six, almost seven times more likely to drop out of high school. They're 15 times more likely to end up in prison while a teenager, 15 times. They are 24 times more likely to run away. And 85% of all children who have behavioral disorders come from a fatherless home. These are statistics from the Census Bureau, et cetera. I mean, 90% of runaways are from fatherless homes. So you can see that fathers are very important. And when this happens, when you have a fatherless home and a child has an issue with drugs or with, you know, he gets into things he shouldn't get into. He tries to prove himself to the wrong people. Things go awry, and society is affected by these fatherless children through poverty. We were in poverty. We didn't have to be in poverty, but because my father, we were, and you know, mental issues, all kinds of things happen when a father's not in the home, and that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to get fathers to understand that. And that's the first part, trying to tell why dads are important. The second part is to understanding the challenges. And the challenges of a kid. You know, the kid has fears. He's got peer pressure. He has confidence issues probably. Or he might have an attitude problem. There's all kinds of things kids have problems with and challenges, and dads can help them get through that. But then again, the father himself has problems, you know, issues to deal with. Sometimes it's time. Like Tracy's husband is gone quite a period of time during the day. And that's a challenge for him to be a good dad when he's gone that much. There's things he has to do to make up for that. And there's challenges of the family, too, because families have to cooperate, and they don't always do that. Sometimes they're too diverse, and sometimes they're too cooperative. But if you get the right mix of that, you've got a good family going. So, and then the last part of the book is actually talking about things you can do to build a stronger child, and that's where I say different areas that you can help and techniques to use to do that.
Well, what are some of them that for the listeners?
Help your child in building him strong. First of all, you have to be there for him and him or her. You got to be loving. If you're loving, they feel special. They feel the love, and they don't go looking for it in other places. And you are teaching your children every moment of the day, whether you're doing it actively or not, because they're watching you.
Yeah.
Watching you, and you have to be a person of principles. If you aren't principled, they're going to either think, man, I don't really respect him much, or they're going to think, well, that's the right way to do it, and it's not the right way to do it. And he has to be consistent with the children. You know, you've got to have, and you got to let them know what the rules are. So, for instance, you know, if you have consequences or you have rewards, you lay them out. And then when there's a consequence to be given, then the natural consequence should take place. If you have a young child who is having a tantrum and they throw their cookie in the floor or it's in a puddle, and they want another one, you say, no, the consequence is you threw that away. It's your problem. You're not getting one now. And you have to be consistent about that. And they could scream and cry, and a lot of parents will give in to that, but you can't. And the same with rewards. You know, you have to reward them when they deserve rewards. If you're not consistent with your kids, they aren't going to trust you, and they're not going to believe you, and you don't want that. And I think, and of course, you have to be involved in their lives. Let them know what's going on. Let them know that you care about what's going on in their lives. With their friends, you need to know their friends. You need to look at their eyes and tell when they're not just right. And you can help them. A father needs to be fun. You know, a father needs to be fun. You don't want your kids to be afraid of you. There are times when you just joke around with them in a non-threatening way, or don't tease them too badly, but just have fun with them. And they like that. So all those things have to be balanced. And that's the other
thing. Right, you have to mix. Right. You know, and take an active role. Go ahead.
What's your best advice for fathers who have time restraints?
Who have time restraints? Well, that's when you've got to be concentrate your time to quality. You know, you go from quantity to quality. Right. If you have a special weekend, then you spend that weekend with your kids. You might be gone all week, but they look forward to the weekend when they can get with you and use some real quality time. If you're around a lot of times, just being around is cool enough. If you're not, then you need to do something special with them. You know, take them to the zoo or play catch with them. You know, just right on one-on-one, eyeball-to-eyeball time. And that's about all you can do, because some dads can't help the fact that they're not around them.
Right,
some
right.
travel, and some are very, very busy, maybe doctors or airline pilots or truck drivers. You just can't be around all the time. But you got to support your family, so you got to work.
Right.
I think
there's
a balance between...
Go ahead.
It's a tough balance between working and supporting your kids emotionally all at the same time. I think that's one of the hardest things that dads have to do, is figure out how to be tough when it's time to be tough and how to be fun when it's time to be fun, and make the money and support the
it's
mom.
It's a lot of stress.
It is a lot of stress
sometimes. And, you know, because it is a very costly world, you need money and everything. But the one thing that kids, you know, I would think, which I do think, is that kids – remember sometimes the smallest thing that you would not think that they would remember. And it's not about maybe what you gave them. It's some incident that had happened that they remember, that you're sometimes shocked that they remembered that. But, and we never know what that is till they get older, and then they say what it is.
I've got an incident like that. As I said, my father was a alcoholic, and he wasn't around much, but there was a time when he was a hard-working guy. He was a truck driver, and he was a hard-working guy when he worked. And when he worked, he was sober most of the time. One time he was hauling sod, and he asked me to go with him. And I went with him, and I got to ride in his big truck and go pick up sod. I was about 10, and I remember him shifting that, just the little details I remember from that. The way he shifted that truck and the scenery went by, and feeling kind of cool that I was riding in this big truck.
Yep.
And it was a simple little thing that my dad probably wouldn't remember, but I sure do, because I didn't have that many memories with him anyway. But that was a good one. And you know, those are so special. Memories are so special, especially when they're with your child or a child with his parent.
Yeah.
Are you in a position to be able to repair some of what happened to you in your childhood with your father?
I'm sorry, do you want me to say what happened to me?
No, are you in a position to be able to repair any of what happened to you with your father?
Oh, well, I tell you what, it took me a long time. I told you I lacked in confidence and things. I did. I became an Air Force pilot when I was in my 20s, but I went to pilot training with a class that was 3/4 Air Force Academy graduates, and I was a, civilian graduate. So I had to compete with these guys, and they had been in the military for 4 years already. I had just came out of the blue, my first time away from home, and I'm scared to death, and these guys are cocksure of themselves. So, you know, I graduated from pilot training, but I would have graduated much higher in my class had I not been so shy and so unsure of myself. And it continued for a while. I was in my almost 40 when I met a sergeant who told me about a book. I said, you know, Sarge, I don't know what I'm going to do. I just never feel like I'm in control, you know. And he mentioned a book called The Psycho-Cybernetics, and I read that book, and it's the first time I could teach myself a few things because I hadn't been taught them how to think about things. So I'm a self-help junkie. I admit that. I don't read them as much now because I don't feel like I need them as much now, but I was a self-help junkie, and they saved my life. They really did. And a lot of the things I write in my book come from theories and thoughts of those self-help books that I had written. Because, I do tell this to fathers. You know, you don't have to read a parenting book, but you can read any book and get something out of it and turn it around to be a better father. So these self-help books, they aren't just for you. They're for you to help your children. And that's what I did a lot of. I wrote my kids all kinds of self-help things, little notes to them all the time. And they probably thought I was a nerd, but they helped me.
Yeah, but you know what? I bet you to this day they remember them.
Yes, and I put a couple of them in my book. One of them was, if you want X, then you must do Y. For instance, if you want responsibility, you must be responsible. And I go down a whole long list of things like that. And I gave that to them when they were probably in their 12 to 15, 20 area. And, they probably thought I was a nerd, but I gave them to them in those little plastic, photo plastic things and asked them to put them in their room. So,
well, kids always think they're their parents. And then when they get older, they realize it's not the case.
We all know that parents go from... They go from very smart to dumb back to smart again. Smart 20 months there.
Well, it happens. We all do that. My father used to, he had this thing, and so you remember it, though. He had, and every time you opened up a cabinet, my father would have those little sayings, the smile or something, and, it was kind of, it was really cute that he did that because, then you think, oh, what is he doing? But then when you think about it, like now, I'm thinking about it, that he did it, when something comes up where you're talking like this, I remember him doing that. And, it's those moments that you do remember.
Yes,
and in a good way.
What? That tells me, that he cared. He cared about you a lot.
Yeah.
And if a kid knows you care about them, it's all the difference in the world. So even though you may embarrass them sometimes with silly things or not so silly things they think are silly, they're really appreciating it because they know you care.
Yeah, but at the time, when teenagers and whatever, it's just the way kids are. They grow out of it, and, you can't really hold them responsible sometimes for it because, they just, kids don't think their parents are, like you said before, they think they might be nerdy or whatever or not cool or whatever. But then, at the end of the day, they get it, but they don't get it then. It's
not
the way it is. You can't.
And a good parent understands that, and they have patience with it.
Well, I think
a
parent has to understand that, right. A lot of parents don't.
Right. Yeah, you don't want them to be disrespectful, but you got to give them some leeways for just being a teenager.
Yeah, I think that would be the case. Tracy, did something else you wanted to ask?
So is it ever too late to start being a good parent if you've been not a great dad so far? Do you wait till your kids are grown up? Do you wait till they're out of their teenage years?
No, you never will. If you're not being a good dad, you need to get on that right away. There's places to go. I mean, there are books to read, but there's other people to talk to. I would be thrilled if a father came to me who was having a little trouble with his kids or feeling comfortable about being a father. I would love to talk to him. And there's grandfathers that do that. There's uncles. There's next-door neighbors. But you should find out what you're not doing right and try to do something to change that right away.
Yeah, if they can, if they can't, sometimes, you're very busy at work, and you're doing a lot of stuff, and sometimes you really don't think that you're doing the wrong thing, and sometimes maybe it is up to the wife to say something because, if a man isn't noticing it, maybe the wife could say it in a good way, not to have an argument, but maybe say, like, maybe you ought to do this or a little, you know, because the mothers sometimes spend time, but there's a lot of fathers that spend a lot of time also. In today's world, a lot of times both people are working. So, you know, it could be at any time that somebody's home with them. It's man or woman.
Yes, I think that's very true. The mother should intercede and let the father know when she thinks something's going on that he should change. But a lot of times fathers are you know, they take that in the wrong way when it's not meant the wrong way. What I have in my book, I think, is very helpful for that, is in Appendix B. It is a it's a self-inspection checklist for dads, because when you're in the service, you do self-inspection checklists before you get inspected by somebody else. So I went through my book, and I picked out a bunch of questions that a dad can ask himself about how he's doing as a father. And the father can reflect upon those things and judge himself and see where he might be strong and where he might be weak. Some of those areas are, you know, are you there for them? And I ask a whole bunch of questions in that area. You know, did you hold them when they were young? Are you aware of their issues? Can you tell when they have issues? Things like that. And then I ask questions about, do you help them face their fears? Because children have fears. I had a lot of fears when I was a kid, but I had no one to help me get out of them. It took me forever to do that. I had one case where I was afraid to swim. And we went swimming one time to a friend's house, and this man taught me how to swim because he took me to the pool and he told me, I'll be right here, get in the deep water, and just fall to the bottom and push yourself back up. And I did that, and it gave me just a little bit of confidence. Then he took me to the end of the pool and told me to jump in and just push and glide to the shallow end. And I was a little nervous about it, but I did. And when I got to the shallow end, I stood up, and I was so proud of myself. So I had a mentor, I had somebody to get me through that fear. And that's what dads are, they're mentors. And there's questions about family cooperation and are you a good example? And do you do things to help build character in your kids? So that's a checklist I have at the end of the book that I think any dad could grow through and see, yeah, I do that. Or, yeah, I don't do that, but you guys should look into it. And most everything that I have in there, everything I have in the checklist is covered somewhere in the book.
So when you're marketing, has your publisher been helping you with the marketing, or because it is difficult to get out there, you know, into the right way?
It really is. You know, I'm sure my publisher is going to listen to this, but
no, that's okay.
You know, that's really not their bailiwick.
Yeah.
I found out, and they warned me of this. You know, because I was an unknown and everything, the publisher asked me, "Are you willing to work hard to promote your book?" And I said, of course I am. That's mainly your job. It's mainly your job to promote your book.
That's what almost, you know, it doesn't really matter these days because Virginia and I have noticed on all of our shows for all these years that that's the one main thing. In fact, tomorrow I have, which I should have said before, but tomorrow I have a show with Julie from JKS Communications. She was on it several years ago, and Virginia and I have maintained friendship with her. She does excellent. I mean, it's expensive, but she now has different programs, and she's really good, and she helps her authors. It's JKS Communications. And, you know, this is not to say that I'm telling everybody that they can't. There's a lot of people out there that are promoting and helping people for smaller amounts of money, but one of the things is you sometimes do have to spend some money these days, because after all these years of doing shows, I think that you sometimes need somebody that can really get you out there, you know, and it's not an easy job. It's very hard. So tomorrow, that is what I have a show actually in the afternoon on Thursday, and it's the same time, you know, as now. It's 3 o'clock Central. Well, actually, mine's 3 o'clock Central, 4 o'clock Eastern, and Julie will explain how, because, you know, Virginia and I, you know, have been doing this for so many years with World of Ink, but I think that both of us have come to the one decision that it does cost money to promote. And years ago, we thought, well, we can have help with other ways, but I think now I'm leaning toward the way of you really do have to spend some money, because there are so many authors out there, and it's the publishers, most of them say the same thing as you're just saying, is that it's the responsibility of the author. Even, it doesn't matter who you're published with, you have to go out there and try to get yourself known. And that is really hard on your first book or even the second or third. It's still a large, it's a job. It's a lot that has to be done.
Well, let me tell you, since my book came out in April and until tomorrow, Sunday is Father's Day, I have been working so hard, probably harder than I ever have, to try to get the word out because, I wrote a book to get the word out, and I can't get the word out unless people know about it.
Yeah.
My situation is I'm very fortunate that, I had a career in the military and I had a civilian career and I'm retired and I have enough money that I hired a local here in St. Louis where I'm from to do publicity for me. And she's got me on quite a few TV shows.
That's good.
I had to pay for that myself. It wasn't paid for by my publisher.
Right.
And but talking about my publisher, what they have done for me and what they do that's great is they try to get your book out there to other countries and things like that.
That's a good thing internationally. Yes, that really is good. That's tough, but it's really a good thing to do. Tracy, I know we all are in the same boat. Anything to say about that too? Because we all have this with our books.
Yeah, it's just part of being an author. If you're not willing to invest and market your own material, then you can't really expect other people. I think especially when you have a message that's really important, you have to be willing to show people that it's important to you and it should be important to them by investing.
That's right.
So I applaud you for that. It's hard. It's hard to. There are 30,000 books published every year. It's hard to make yours stick out.
Yeah, I am far in the hole as far as money goes, but it's not my concern. I mean, I would spend more to get the message out. So I'm not really doing it for money. I surely hope. I haven't seen a royalty check yet because I don't know when they start coming in. But I don't even have an idea how many books I've sold. But I do appreciate my publisher so much because they've helped me get the word out through their website, et cetera.
That's very important.
And they've sold the book to a publisher in China of all places.
That's
so there's 1.5 billion people in China. So who knows?
Who are you published with, Michael?
Familius.com. They're a relatively maybe 3 or 4 year old company, but they specialize in family things. That's where they get
This is actually the Family Matters show. I should have said that right. I always forget that because that's Virginia and Tracy's show. I'm sorry, Family Matters.
Yeah.
And I've done some of them with Virginia myself, and that is Familius has been really nice in promoting our shows and sending us authors. We thank them for that, and because they do contact us. So the truth is, they are helping you because they contacted us.
Right.
I think that's really important, and that's why Virginia and I know it does matter a lot because that's what our message has been for the last 5 years. And Julie, who will be on tomorrow, is very interesting, and she was on one of the first, she was on a long time, I don't remember how long ago it was, but we've been friendly with her since. And I do notice now, and we'll be talking about it tomorrow, that there are smaller programs for people to afford. So if you want to listen tomorrow, you might hear some other ways because she's out traveling. She'll be probably in an airport tomorrow when we have the show. Mm-hmm. But it's JKS Communications, and they really have been doing this, and they have a lot of best-selling authors. And actually, I'm going to have Mary McNear on. She's a best-selling author. She'll be on in August. And we're trying to bring things like this to all to people that are listening to us because we know that it's hard. And Tracy, Tracy, you are really special. And when you and Virginia have done shows with a lot of other authors that are blind, you do a terrific job of getting out there. And I mean, so people really, you are an inspiration to a lot of people out there because you've done a lot.
Hope
and
so.
Quitting is not something you do. You keep going.
No. No,
and although
not.
We haven't done a lot of shows together, I know about you from Virginia, and that show that we had, and I think we should put that out, Virginia and I'm going to make a note, of when you had all of the authors that were blind, it was a wonderful show. Because,
There's a whole group of blind authors here in the United States that they're all super determined and dreamers, and they go out and they get things done because they believe in their message and they believe that they have something to offer and that we don't give up. One of the things being blind will teach you is that there are things in life that get in your way and there are ways around it. You
See,
just have to be tough enough to get around it.
And I think that's really a good message.
Same for Father.
It's a great message, you know, to send out there, you know, and because I think people, you know, they give up, but you're not ever giving up. And a lot of people that are in your same situation, they are writing, they are doing other jobs, they are marketing, they are doing everything. So you can't give up. I really do believe in that, not quitting and just saying, I can't do it. It's easy to say, I can't do it. It's hard to keep going on. I've been doing this for like 20 years. This is hard. You know, it is, and it's hard getting out there. That's why we ask these questions, because we know. And everybody, every show that I've had over the past 5 years, I've always learned something that somebody does that maybe I can do, you know. And I think that that's one of the reasons Virginia and I keep doing shows, you know, and have a lot of authors on and other things. We have, you know, breast cancer shows, heart shows. We have a lot of different kind of shows because it helps me also and Virginia be better writers. And, you know, Tracy, you are inspirational.
Thank you. That's one of the things I learned from reading Michael's blog, too, was that there are a lot of different challenges that fathers have, and it gets hard, and you want to throw your hands in the air and just decide that you can't. You can't make a difference with your kids, and you can't do better. And he's got lots of practical advice on his blog about things that you can do, little things that you can do at different ages with different kids.
Right, because, you know, even if you're not living in the same house with them, that doesn't mean anything. They have to know you're there for them. And kids know. They just know.
They know. You can't pull the wool over their eyes. And what you said about, you know, you can make kids, you know, like learn to love learning just by taking them on trips on vacations and learning about different places and going to the zoo and that you spark their interest, and that makes them want to learn more and read more. You know, if you let your kids sit there and stare at a TV or play with video games, their imagination and interest in other things just won't happen. And that's one of the ways a father can help a mother is to get their kids engaged in different outdoor activities and things. So, yeah, it takes a team, and that's why a single parent is an awful tough job.
It's a very tough job. It's a tough job being a parent in general because you don't know exactly if you're doing a good job and you find out later sometimes, you know, and that's what I'm saying. Like sometimes when those little things that they remember, I mean, that, and you go like, oh, my God, they remembered that. And it's like it's really, it is because it's not what you gave them for their birthday. It's something you've done with them or going to bat for them or going to bat for them if something has happened in their life, you know, things like that matter.
I have a chapter in the back of the book called The Rewards, and I have some little notes in there I got from my daughters. My son, he's a boy, he doesn't write too many notes, but I've got notes from my daughters, and they're telling me about things that we did when they were young, and I just love it. I found them in a drawer, and I threw them in my book because, you know, I look back at those notes and say, Dad, I remember when you did this, we were in the car, and I woke up from a long trip, and you looked at me in the mirror, and I could see your eyes were smiling, and you threw me a York peppermint patty, little things like that.
Right. See,
And she remembers that.
I think that's one of the good things of life, that you remember those smaller things, you know. And like you're saying, go out and play and do things. I know it has become an electronic world, you know. There's no doubt about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but, you know, one of the things, if you like the electronics, which we all have the Kindle and iPhones and everything, you could even read a book to a child on there, you know. But I think sales are not as good for e-books for children's books because, you know, parents feel that they want the child to hold the book, which is true. But sometimes if they don't want to, this might be a good way for them to get used to using their electronic devices to read a book. If you're there with them. Yeah.
Yes.
You know, that's how it is now. All the schools are going to have them. A lot of schools are having them now. And the kids, this is the way of the world now. So I think in the children's market, it's not up as much as it should be. So if they have a few minutes, it's not a bad thing to do to look at your electronic device and maybe spend some time with your child because at least you're spending some time with the child, not just leaving them.
My granddaughter, my granddaughter does some interactive math problems on her iPad.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So there's good things too. You know, I mentioned in my book that I don't talk about technology like my book because the principles of good parenting are the same no matter what changes in technology.
Right.
And so the same principles apply. So
well, you're an engineer. You're an engineer, so you know
yeah.
that technology keeps changing so fast.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Quicker than I can shake a stick.
Yeah, because 6 years ago, I mean, even 6 years ago, it wasn't like five. I think, we've been doing shows 5 years, but I think, you know, when I found Red River, I was on the internet and I signed up for doing a show as far as being on a show myself because the publisher said, go ahead and get on a radio show. And I go, I don't think this is going to happen. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. That's what I said. I don't want to do it. So, you know, and then there was somebody advertising, which was April Robin from, you know, Red River. And I said, okay, fine, I'll be on it. She was asking for people to be on for 5 minutes, you know, to read part of their book. I went, okay, I think I'll try it. I was a wreck, total wreck. And after that, I started doing shows with Red River, and that was something I never thought I'd ever do. But that was not that long ago. So before that, we didn't do this. You know, radio, you could be on the radio, you know, but not in this way, that like we have, which we communicate all over the world.
I mean, look how parenting has changed with social media. 10 years ago, we didn't have this issue with social media. Now it's a huge issue. And you have to be very, very vigilant with your children about that.
Yes.
But it's still the same. It's still the same principles that you just.
It's hard because it's hard because you don't know what they do when they're with their friends. It is very difficult. And you know, we've said on many of our shows, all the hosts say the same thing. You know, you do have to watch what your children are because you know, just because someone says, you know, I'm 18 doesn't mean they're 18. They only ask the question. That doesn't mean they're going to tell you that they're not 18 and they're looking at certain sites that maybe they shouldn't be on.
Parents sometimes they tend to be naive about their children and what they might be into. You can't trust them. You might think they would never do this or that, but trust them but verify, as Reagan once said. Trust them but verify.
Well, because it's kind of, you know, it's something that they might think they want to do. You know, they're not really realizing a lot of these things because, you know, we're not born knowing everything. So I think there are no rules online.
Well, there's peer pressure, too.
Yeah.
Peer pressure is a strong, strong thing. And kids have a hard time with peer pressure. And that's one of the things that I talk about in my book is how to help them with peer pressure. And it's not easy. You know, it's not really, there's no real hard and fast answers to peer pressure. We all have it, even as adults. But, boy, when it comes to social media, there's a lot of peer pressure. And you've got to combat that.
Right.
Do you think dads can combat peer pressure?
Sure. You know, they have to. You know, for instance, when guys hang out with other guys, if there's not a dad around, they're going to listen to those other guys a lot more.
Mm,
if you've got a father in the home, he says, you know, son, that is not right to do these XYZ things. I don't want to ever hear about it from you. And that alone will keep him from doing some things he might have otherwise done.
Yeah.
So,
peer pressure. Right.
Right.
I have all sons.
Oh,
so
really?
So it's helpful to know that maybe their dad can have a little more influence.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the kids shouldn't fear their parents, but they should certainly respect them. And if you set standards for your sons to live by, And you say this is what I expect out of you, and if it doesn't happen, there's going to be consequences. Well, that means a lot. That means a lot, and they're going to think twice before they do some things that they would have done without that advice.
Yeah, I think that's very good advice because it's true. You know, sometimes in their head, then they'll think, uh-oh. You know, there has to be some kind of uh-oh. You know, that they know that they shouldn't do something. You know,
you don't want to think that they're not doing. You don't want to think that they're not doing it only because they're afraid of you, but at the same time, if you do put a little bit of fear in their head, they're going to think twice about doing some things.
Right, because it's a disappointment. Yeah. There's a lot of different ways you can say the things, you know, because this is how kids learn and how they grow up, and, you know, so you have to be there on the level. That's what the good thing is, like Tracy said, to be talking about this and having a book like this, because it's, you know, it's a necessary thing. And it's, and mothers need to do the same. So, you know, so the book is good for everyone. So what's next for you?
Well,
what are your plans?
After Father's Day, I'm going to take a couple of days off. It's
okay. Right.
After that, I'm trying to find other ways to get the word out of my book. The thing, some of the words I want to get out are, this is a book that is very easy to read. I've had many people tell me that, and that was my goal, to make it very easy to read.
Right.
Because some of the fathers that need it the most, you know, don't like to read, but you want it to be something simple. So you can pick up the book and flip through any part and just read a small section, and you don't get caught up in the long, big thing. It was written by another dad. It wasn't written by, you know, by a research scientist or educational fellow, you know. It's written in simple language.
Well, that's why people will like it, because it's, you know, it's at the level where they can understand it, because, you know, it's not great when you read a book and then you have to, like, go back and check things out and think about what they really said, because, you know, people just want to read and get it. They don't want to, like, think about what they have to do to understand what they wrote, because that happens sometimes. You get too technical, people don't want to hear it.
Right. I was in the library. I mean, at the library, but the bookstore the other day, and I saw a book, Father's Matter, I think it was. But when I looked at it, it was, and I'm sure it's an excellent book, but it was small print, very long paragraphs, and it was just kind of a put off as far as some people would be, you know. And it's like, oh man, I don't want to dive into that. My book doesn't scare people like that.
That's good. Have you done it in an audio book? Have you thought about an audio book?
Yes. Well, I have an audio book right here on the power of dad.
Oh, it's audio book. Okay, that's good. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. The funny thing about it is, Demilius, of course, did it for me, and
that's good.
That's another thing that you good about having a publisher.
Yes.
But the person that does the audio is a British gentleman, and he makes it sound quite official.
You know, I wanted to ask you, okay, as long as you brought that up, okay, because I really think when you're on Amazon now, and if you want to do your own, because a lot of times people are doing their own, they can find a narrator. So, you know, and a British accent really does sound really good, because I've been listening to a lot of audiobooks.
And it does matter.
It really does matter who does do the narration of your book. It matters.
Well, this gentleman, and I wish I could remember his name offhand, but he's excellent. The only thing is, he pronounces some words a little differently than, you know, like when I say mores, he says mores, you know, and I say contribute, he says contribute or something like that. So, but I think people can suggest, and it's not a problem.
Yeah, I think if a book sounds good. Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I'd probably like to listen to it. Now, I'll get in touch with you to find out who that is, because I do think, you know, I've been listening to a lot of these, and, you know, over the years I've heard it does matter, and it does matter, because now that I'm listening to audiobooks. Tracy, you're an audiobook? You like that?
I do all audiobooks. I belong to the Library for the Blind, and
right,
we get
and they
all
have everything.
Of our books
yeah.
on
so
audio.
That's, yeah, so it's I love it, because you really, you know, because sometimes when you're reading, you skip things, and this way, you know, even if you're reading probably in Braille, right, you would skip things. This
yep.
way, it goes in your head. I like that audio.
Yeah, every single word.
Yeah, yeah, I really, yes, you do, though. You know, because people do tend to skip over things, you know, and in the audio, you don't. You're hearing it word for word. Yeah, I think it's a great way to, you know, a lot of times, you know, I think that people can, if they don't have time to read, that they can listen to an audio book, you know. And
I read anywhere from 30 to 50 books a week, because I listen to them. And
oh,
I'm
my
listening
God.
To
really?
The book almost
wow.
around the clock. Yeah, when I do homework with my kids, when I clean my floors.
Yeah, I do.
And
that's what I've been doing, whatever
have,
I'm doing. Yeah, I think it's a great.
Yeah.
I think it's really good. So, do you have a favorite narrator of a voice type, female, male?
There is a woman who narrates for the Library for the Blind. Her name is Jill Fox,
mm-hmm.
and she's got kind of a little British accent. And she's
what's her
very
name? Jill.
Clear.
Jill
Fox.
Wow. Okay.
Another
she's
British
really
accent.
Good. She's probably my favorite. Yes,
I really like that. I'm telling you, it really sounds. It's a great sound on a video and not audio. I think it really is.
It makes a huge difference. If I get an audiobook with a narrator that I have a hard time understanding, or I don't like the speed that they're speaking, then I have a much harder time reading. And a lot of times I'll turn off an audiobook that is not done correctly because it's too hard to listen to.
Yeah. Yeah.
I read a book called The Poison Princess, where the main character, she is from New Orleans, and the male character in the book has a Cajun. He speaks French Cajun.
Mm-hmm.
And the narrator actually has a French Cajun accent. And so when the narrator does the male character in the book, it sounds really, really neat.
It made that book ten times better.
It does.
What's the book called? The Poison?
It's called The Poison Princess. It's a YA, young adult fiction about a girl.
Always good to know.
Yeah, it's a good book.
All right, we've come to almost the end of the show. It's been really very informative. I have notes already. I always take notes on things that I want to do, and I hope to do them. And, okay, so do you want to maybe, well, Tracy, you'll stay on with me for a second afterwards. We'll just, okay.
You bet.
Yeah, okay. All right, let's see.
Michael, let us know what your blog
address
is and where people can buy your book, too.
Yes, my blog address is the same as my name, michaelbyronsmith.com. And that's my website, and within that is my blog, which is called Helping Fathers to Be Dads. And that's where I write twice a week about an article, trying to help fathers to be dads.
And the name of your book is The Power of Dadhood? The Power of Dadhood.
The book is called The Power of Dadhood.
Yeah.
How to be the father your child needs. The website is Michael Byron Smith, and the blog is Helping Fathers to Be Dads. And my book is available in Barnes & Noble on Amazon.com and almost any, like Walmart, Target, any place online. So, yeah, you can get online just about anywhere. It is at all Barnes & Noble, across the country. And I do have some local bookstores that have it also.
That's great. So,
is it available
to be
for
a thing
your
in
publisher,
the past. Right, we need some local bookstores. It's a good thing.
Yes. I went to a couple of local bookstores, and they had a couple of book signings, and they were
that's
happy
great.
To carry it. And
that's really good.
I love to help local bookstores. I think they're very important.
Oh, it's hugely important.
Play.
It is, yeah. Yeah, Barnes & Noble are important. Yeah. Also, they need to have more book signings. They don't have as many as they used to, but it's. I think people like them.
People like to talk to an author. Yeah, I'm going to Saturday to a Barnes & Noble in Chesterfield, Missouri, for 2 hours. And
that's great.
Hopefully people come by, and hopefully somebody who listened to this broadcast will come by and say hello to me.
Okay, we spread it out. We spread the word out. Thank you so much for being on, and please come back again. And, we wish you luck and have a good rest after Father's Day.
Thank you, Marcia. Thank you, Tracy. Nice talking to you.
Goodbye. Nice to
you.
Same here. Okay,
bye-bye.
Tracy, where can they find you?
You can find me at Amazon.com. My second book hasn't come out yet, but you can also find me at my website, www.tracymcdonald.blogspot.com. That's Tracy with an I. I'm the blind lady with an extra I. Or on my Facebook page, TracyMcDonald.505.
Oh, okay. That's you in Virginia, I don't know if you have your next show scheduled. I'm not sure that you do, but it's not out. Well, because the summer is going to be a little different for a lot of the hosts. We'll be
doing
different
summer's
time.
A little confusing.
I'm very confused. I used to do my shows everyone on Tuesday, and now J.D. Holiday does some of my Tuesdays, and I'm doing some of the Thursdays, and Willow does Fridays, and sometimes I'm going to do the Fridays. Virginia does
Mondays,
and now, right, and it's like, Cassandra does on Sunday, so we're all over the place here, but that's important because we all have different subjects. And it's always a fun show listening. All right, it's been fun being with you, Tracy. I'm so happy to have been with you on the show. I didn't have much notice from Virginia. And hi, Virginia. I know she's listening to this later. I will say hello to her. Okay. All right. And you can find a lot of things about the hosts and about the people that we've had on the shows on www.worldofinknetwork or www.michiganavenuemedia. And my work is at www.marciacaspercook.com. And so this has been fun. Thank you so much, and I'm sure that Michael needs a rest
great.
After this. He needs a rest. All right, thank you so much. All right, take care. Goodbye,
you too,
everybody.
Thanks.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye-bye.